The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends, and thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we will discuss the new Austin FC signing, Khaled Obrian. We will go through scouting reports for the top super draft prospects. We will discuss the newest jersey rumor and the latest MLS and Apple TV controversies. My name is Landon Cottam, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremiah Bentley. And Landon, I think we should probably set up sort of the next couple weeks of what we have going on. So one is we are taking Christmas off. So next week on Monday night would be our show, but we're going to do a little blast from the past and go back to an interview that probably not a lot of people have heard. I think we both listened to today and found super interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't listened to it in a long time. It's from early 2020, I believe. But we'll have a little intro kind of setting it up and sharing some of our thoughts. So we'll add some new stuff to it as well. But then bulk of the episode is just going to be one of our favorite interviews we've ever done. We also have our New Year's Day meetup. We talked about that last week. Is there anything else that we feel like concrete enough of sharing at this point?
More details to come. We'll probably do like some sort of recording the show, because again, we don't, I think, necessarily want to do like a lot of studio time on New Year's Day. So we'll do that. We're going to hang out. The request has been to find a place with access to a bathroom, which apparently is a legitimate concern. We have a big group of people getting together, so we're going to figure that one out as much as we can. But again, it'll be a really good time to like meet everybody and hang out. And on Christmas, so what do you guys have a tradition, and like do you even buy gifts anymore at this point, or what do you and Ashley do?
There are quite a few children in our family still, so we buy gifts for children. Me and my parents and my brother will all kind of do a little single gift for each couple thing, but we've kind of phased it out in most aspects of it to where gift buying is fairly limited, which is good because my family is too big for that nonsense
to buy. So. That's fair. Yeah, I mean, we're kind of the same way. Like, we get every family buy stuff for one of the other families, and then you know, we get mom and dad things that they wouldn't buy for themselves anyhow. But it's just, I mean, it's a good time to spend time with the family. But it's very different from like waking up as a child on Christmas morning and like finding whatever the latest toy or gift or thing you were excited about was going to be.
Yeah, we'll instead get to wake up on Christmas morning and drive through most of Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle.
Oh, that's very exciting.
All right, we want to get into some Austin FC news, Jeremiah.
Yeah, it's a pretty busy week in Austin FC news and league news. First and most importantly, Austin has another player, which is something we've been waiting to talk about.
Jeremiah, would you like to take a crack at the pronunciation of the new player's name?
I would go with Khaled Obrian. That'd be correct?
I believe so, yeah. The one thing I'm not 100% clear on is where the accent goes on the last name. The MLS guide says Obrian and on the second syllable. In any case, I think the most important one and the easiest one to get wrong there is the first name, which is Khaled.
Yes, he is acquired him through is the first pick in the Major League Soccer reentry draft, most recently in Dallas, correct?
Correct. Three seasons in Dallas.
Yeah, three seasons in Dallas from Columbia, 17 goals, 13 assists in his MLS career. Do you want to go through, what do you want to start with, this weird series of trades that led to us getting him, or do you want to talk about his deal first?
Let's talk about the weird stuff just briefly so everyone has the full context here. So the re-entry draft, again, is essentially like a little free agency draft for players who don't qualify for true free agency in MLS. So, okay, let's start from the beginning here. We got a third round super draft pick, which is, super draft is a college draft. We'll get into that later on in the show.
Here in a little bit. Yep.
We got a third round super draft pick from Cincinnati for the rights to Kip Keller's contract. We did not have a third round super draft pick because I believe we traded it to maybe for Sophie Jafal's rights last year. We traded away to someone last year and got it back from Cincy for Kip's rights. Then we traded that third round pick that we just got again, the super draft pick, and our number five reentry draft pick to Toronto for the first pick in the reentry draft. That is what we used to pick O'Brien with. I saw a lot of people discussing whether or not it was even necessary to do all of this, because I think there were two or three guys taken in the entire reentry draft this year. And so they're like, did we actually need to do that? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, maybe Austin needed to do that. Maybe Austin didn't need to do that. But what making that deal did was give Austin a security one that nobody else was going to jump in front of him. And they were able to get the guy that Austin wanted because they had already agreed to not extend the contract to Kip Keller. So obviously Kip Keller was not in Austin's plans.
Right. So it was not the full value of Kip Keller, right? I think that's important to point out as well. Kip Keller qualified for the reentry draft. What the details of this maneuver revealed is that Kip Keller opted out of the reentry draft. I think the likely explanation of that is Austin FC and Kip Keller were talking to each other and saying, okay, if you opt out, we can kind of do each other a solid.
You can go to Cincinnati, which
have a say in like where you go. Maybe there was other teams involved there. But you get a bit of a say where you go. We get a little bit of money thrown back at us, or a draft pick in this case. And so I think it's important to say, like, it wasn't trading Kip Keller. It was trading the rights to negotiate a contract with Kip Keller.
What did you say? The notion of Kip Keller, I think, is how you described it.
Yeah.
Maybe online. Yeah.
I have
no problem.
That's how we got to this point. Yeah, that's how we get to this point. But it does. It seems like a few mildly valuable things, like very low value assets, in order to guarantee that we're going to get this guy that we apparently had our eye on. So there was some discussion about it, but I think it's worth kind of going to the bottom. It's like, we didn't actually give up that much to get this guy. Looking at the contract, so last season, his base salary is $382,500, $467,000 guaranteed, which is, that is what the actual cap hit would be, is the guaranteed part. I was talking to Mike Crignola, and we're talking about the fact that like signing bonuses and stuff all get kind of spread across the first length of the contract. And so it could be as high as like 500, 600K, but it could be a bit below that if some of what his hitting the cap here is like bonuses and things like that. So, but we're guessing it's going to be somewhere between 400 and 600K.
So let's talk about him as a player and what he's done sort of over time in Dallas, maybe where he came from, what we can expect from him. He's not a very tall guy. That's one very obvious thing. What is he, 5'5"?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, he's short and he's fast. Those are the two things I know about him primarily.
That's kind of what I knew about him just from seeing him with Dallas. I think a good place to start is a quote from John Arnold that Phil West got for an article he wrote on Verde All Day. And John Arnold says, I think he's just a fighter. He has a lot of desire and wants to help the team. And so hearing that from him, like, I think I had always seen O'Brien is like kind of a serious player on the field, and went through and found some interviews online. He's seems like a really nice dude, which was, I don't know, he just like didn't give me that vibe on the field the way he like acts sometimes. But in the interview, like, very gentle speaker, but thoughtful, when like give good answers. It reminded me a little bit of like John Gallagher. Like, Gallagher is like kind of quiet and not super energetic when he speaks, but will like sit there and think about a question and give an honest answer. As far as on the field, I think I had like a bit of a misconception of exactly the kind of player he was. I was thinking he was strictly straight line speed, stretching the line. They would launch balls to him. But going back and watching a film of him in Dallas, he actually does like move inside. They actually played him quite a bit as a second forward, or they would play him on the right wing or the left wing. He was competing for minutes with Paul Arriola. And so they would play him on the right wing. They would play him some in the left wing. They would play him as a second striker with Jesus Ferreira. And what I saw from him was that he's not just a run fast in a straight line and hope something happens guy. He will drop in side and like receive with his back to goal and combine with guys. He just moves around the field a lot more than I thought he would. And I was talking to Kevin Morris whenever this news came out, and Kevin has been operating under the assumption that Josh Wolf wants to play with that attacking shape, that 3-2-2-3 attacking shape. And that's kind of what we're going to see our roster build go to. Whenever the O'Brien signing was announced, I think he was thinking, and I was kind of thinking this too, they're like, okay, maybe we're not doing that. Maybe we're going to go for just some like out and out wingers and go back to that 4-3-3. But I really think O'Brien could play in that tucked in spot, like in one of those two advanced attacking midfielders, like opposite Driussi, or kind of that role that Rigoni played while Driussi was injured last season. So I think he can play out in the wing, but he is useful in those little inside spaces as well.
Yeah, I think just in terms of what he's done and like what Austin might get, because it's Austin didn't give up a ton. You're looking at a guy that played 1,900 minutes last year, over 2,000 minutes in 2021. It's like average 20 starts a year for a team that's, like we talked about, like pretty talented in the attack. So it's, I mean, he's an asset. Like, he's the kind of asset, again, like with some of these deals, like you have to see how the rest of the kind of team comes together, but given his salary and how much he's played and sort of the versatility he has, like it seems like a pretty good deal overall.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, we were talking about what a successful offseason would look like a few weeks back, and these are the kinds of move that I think Austin FC needs to make. O'Brien does not fix this team on his own. He's not so good that he makes us take a huge jump in quality, but he absolutely makes this team better. And when you can, let's say Nick Lima, when you can sell on Nick Lima, you get, okay, say, yeah, you're going to pay most of or all of Nick Lima's salary to O'Brien if we're going one for one there, but then you got that extra money on top of it in the trade. And so that's why like moves like this and hitting on moves like this is going to be really important for Austin FC this year, where you're not paying transfer fees, you're not trading assets. We get O'Brien essentially for free, and he's a guy who absolutely makes this team better right now. And so I think business-wise, this is a really good fit.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And why don't you share the sort of, I know his stats aren't like eye-popping and they're a little bit of underwhelming, but like where would he have slotted in 2023 Austin FC in terms of goal contributions?
Yeah, so he had 6 goals and 5 assists, so 11 total goal contributions. That puts him in second place for 2023 Austin FC. Driussi had 15, Gallagher was second with 9. And so the stats aren't huge, but it's better than what we are getting from almost every attacker on the team. So he's an upgrade for sure. And I also think he is just a profile of a guy that Austin FC has never had in a starting caliber player. I was talking about how he likes to kind of move inside more than I kind of expected him to. That being said, he does, like, his instinct is to go fast, to push the game. And so even when he does drop in and receive with his back to goal or floats inside to combine, as soon as he releases the ball, he gets vertical. Like, he moves and makes a run in behind, and he's pretty selfless with it as well. Like, he'll make that run even when he doesn't expect to get it. And like, you see some guys are like, I'm not going to get it, I'm just going to like kind of fake this run. He does it with conviction. He goes. And John Arnold also said, like, he like gets caught offside a lot, but that's like, that doesn't happen. Like, how many Austin FC players could you say that about? Just because how many Austin FC players tried to run in behind at all?
or like actually on the attack? No, I think it's a very good point. You mentioned that this is some of his discussion with Phil on For Verde All Day. And if you really want a deep dive into O'Brien's contribution, I think Phil wrote like 2 articles. I think one with all his goals and one with all his assists from last year that sums it up. So just encourage everybody to continue to subscribe to that.
Yeah. Do we think, like, do we think Obreon steps into the starting lineup? Like, is he a guaranteed starter right now? And should he be by the time the season rolls around?
I don't think he's a guaranteed starter stepping in, but he seems to be, he'd be competing for, I could see him getting 20 starts, right? Like we got in Dallas last year. So yeah. I feel like that set of starts, even though maybe he's not an out and out winger, that's going to come from among he, Finley, and Rigoni, given what we know with his club right now, unless other acquisitions come. But you've got what, like 80 starts between the three of them. I can see him getting like a decent sized chunk of those.
Yeah, I think with the team as it stands now, I absolutely agree with that. If we get to a position where just because of better player, I know there's like injuries and form and all of this, he could fall off next season, whatever. But if he's not getting 20 starts and it's because we get a new player come in that's that much better than him, then that puts Austin FC in a pretty good position.
This is a good problem.
Yep. If Obreon is the guy that is starting 20 games, I don't think that's a bad thing either. We still need to add some spaces, either a striker or some other type of creative player that's going to add to the goal tally. That is still a necessity for this team to compete in 2024. That's TBD, whether that comes this window or summer or at all. He's not that much of a difference maker, but absolutely makes his team better.
And you briefly mentioned like maybe there's a fall off. The other good thing about him, which I don't think we mentioned, is he's only 28. So this is not, this is an attacking player on the good side of 30, which Austin has not added a lot of over the last couple seasons.
And talking about like the personal side of things, he does seem like a good dude. Hopefully him and Valencia, they're both Colombians, both seem like similar temperament off the field as well. So hopefully they can be helpful to each other in kind of that transition period. But yeah, I was a little surprised by this move coming in, but after watching video, kind of doing some research, I'm positive on this one now.
Oh, it's the Landon Cottom seal of approval on this deal, which is good. Let's talk about the super draft. So this will come up on Wednesday. No, on Tuesday. Tuesday, sorry. 2 p.m. Central on Tuesday. Available on MLS Season Pass. So I guess if this is going to be the first super draft you could watch somewhere other than the internet, I think. Include live lookings from draft headquarters and all those kinds of things. This is, for those who don't remember, in 2021, Austin's first pick was Danny Pereira. 2022 is Kip Keller. 2023, CJ Fodres. And so far, Austin's 3-for-3 and getting Generation Adidas players and relatively successful, I think, there. And Austin will be picking fifth in 2020. Well, I guess in 2023, for the 2024 season. Yeah.
They're calling it the 2024 Super Draft. So,
yeah.
I guess like looking back at the rest of the picks, like let's maybe set expectations a little bit.
Okay.
Here, because we're about to talk about like 10 to 12 players that I watched some video on. Jeremiah's watched a little bit of video on some of them. It's going to be easy to kind of get excited about one or two of these guys and think like they're going to come in and fix it all. Every one of these guys is a lottery ticket at best. And most of them are not even that. Like, well, if you look at the rest of our picks, we have 2021 Freddie Kleeman, Daniel Steedman, Aiden Stanley, Noah Lawrence. So Stanley made the roster that year.
Played two Kleeman, games, I think.
Yeah. Kleeman made the roster that year. Steedman never signed. Lawrence never signed. 2022 Keller, Asensio, and Knapp. I don't remember who Knapp even is. Never signed. Asensio played one or two games for the first team, spent the rest of the time with Austin FC 2.
That was the point I was going to make. Of every player that's ever been in Austin FC in a jersey, Michael Knapp is the one that I didn't even recognize the name, and I had to go look him back up again. He was the third round pick, went to Montclair State.
I don't think he ever even
I don't remember seeing him like as a trialist or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. 2023 traded up to get CJ Fodre at the 13th spot, I believe. Got Val Noel in the 20th spot. So those two guys are still with us. Jackson Walty played for the second team, traded Colorado. So we got some assets there. Sam Mazzaferro still with us. So different. It's like different expectations, right? But we're getting value out of these guys anyway. TBD if Noel maybe gets a first team contract, or maybe Mazzaferro has a chance to. But Fodre will likely spend most of this year with the first team, I'm guessing. That being said, like, Fodre is still going to be like a bench player at best probably this year. Maybe he can work into something else. But all that said, like, as high as you can pick guys, Philip Mayaka that first year was supposed to be like the guy, right? And he has never played an MLS minute, I don't think, and is playing for Charlotte's second team now.
Right.
So set your expectations low. And if anything, if this player or these players do anything more than that, that's great. But we should not really expect to get anything huge out of this.
Right. Unless you're like a super nerd like some of us and you're really into FCito. And then I think the 2023 class is probably what you could expect to see some out of the 2024 class, where a lot of, you don't get a lot of like first team talent, but you get a lot of guys who are like solid dudes who are going to help the second team compete and be a strong side in MLS Next Pro.
Yeah. So Claudio Reyna's team seemed to take the draft seriously. Do we think Rodolfo Borrell will take it seriously?
I don't have any idea. I don't think, have we heard anything from him like about the super draft at all that makes you believe anything?
I don't think so. I mean,
so this is all speculation and not based upon anything. But my general attitude is that it does not seem like the Borrell regime will take this as seriously as Claudio Reyna did. And I don't see, like, in 2021 and 2023, I believe Austin like made moves to get additional picks, right? Because they picked, they had more than three players. Like, I don't see Borrell like wheeling and dealing to acquire extra super draft picks.
Yeah. And so we currently have that number five pick. We could still deal that pick. Like, that could happen as late as like 10 minutes before the pick, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that'll be a major sign of them like not having the super draft as part of their plan or like prioritizing that, is if we're saying we need to get allocation money value out of this. Like, Austin, this part is true regardless of what their strategy is. Austin needs to get value out of the draft, whether that's in players or trading spots to get money. That's kind of what remains to be seen. And so whenever that number five pick rolls around, if Austin still has it, then either they do value the draft or they just see a specific player that they value and that player is still there. But yeah, it would not surprise me to see that pick get sold off before it comes to us.
So let's talk about, I guess the big change is that there are underclassmen available in the draft this year. And it seems like
the sophomores and juniors before, up until this season, could not enter the draft on their own. You essentially had to be invited by signing a Generation Adidas contract. Now it seems like they're the three GA players this year are all freshmen. And so any sophomore is eligible to enter the draft. So that kind of changes the dynamic of the whole thing now, doesn't it? Like, I heard Travis Clark talking about this on Extra Time today. He's the from Top Drawer Soccer. We're going to be citing him quite a bit today. And then there's an article that Charles Bohm wrote for MLSsoccer.com where he interviewed some sporting directors around the league. And there are some quotes from Craig Weibel from Seattle. And he was talking about how they're viewing these new rules. And he said, okay, we have this like first layer of players, which is like guys that we think could maybe make the squad this year. The second level of players who maybe might have a chance, but we're probably like looking at the MLS Next Pro team. And then this new draft rules introduces kind of this third tier of players. It's like, okay, this guy is good, but we think a year of college might do him good still. So the new rules would allow a team to select a player in the draft. That player can go back to college for a year or two even, and then come back and sign with the team that picked them whenever they're done with school or whenever they're done with that next year. And so Travis Clark on Extra Time was calling this the draft and stash strategy. And so I think there are going to be a lot of teams kind of using this, like teams who maybe have a pretty steady, like solid roster now, and they're just going to take best available talent, regardless of whether it's a position of need or they think that player is ready now, and just let them go back to college for a year, maybe put them up on the their MLS Next Pro team, and then bring them up whenever they're ready. I don't think Austin FC can really afford to do that in this draft because of what I was saying before. Like, we need to get value out of it. And although like that could bring future value, we kind of need it now. And so I think they need to either pick a player that they think can make the first team or trade that pick.
Yeah. So I guess just generally my suggestion for approach would be just knowing that these are all crapshoots. Like, you have to take the player you think this is the best player in any position. So are you saying like, you think Austin should, if they're going to keep the pick, like, do you not do that? Do you actually look at like your roster today and like where the needs are and who fits into it best? Or are you still looking at take the most talented player available when you select?
If it were me, I would be picking a guy that I think has a chance of making the roster this year. Unless they're looking at tape of one of these guys and it's like, okay, this guy's too good to pass up on. Like, too good to pass up on. We have to take him. But we'll get into this with some of the like the highest profile picks, where it's like, I think some of these guys are potentially really big talents, but I don't think they make a difference this year.
Okay, so if you had the choice between, if you had a midfielder that you felt like was a better player than a fullback, there was a huge gap, like you would still take the fullback because that's a greater position of need for Austin right now?
Yes, unless there's still like a generational talent on the board, which, at number five, there's probably not. So I'm thinking that there's enough players in positions of need that will be available at five that Austin FC can strategize that way.
Okay, well, let's get into players then. Look, we've probably set this up for too long. Let's talk about some guys.
Yeah, so Top Drawer Soccer releases a mock draft every year. We've never picked any of the guys that they positioned us to pick, right?
No, because like Danny got picked earlier than he thought. I think nobody thought Kip. I don't remember, but no, we've not.
Nobody thought Kip was going to drop far.
Nobody thought Kip was going to be available. Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah.
So all that said, like the person they picked for us, it's pretty unlikely we're going to get that person, but it is a really interesting thing to see. Like, okay, Travis Clark and his team, experts on college soccer. They've also talked to folks who are at this, this MLS combine and seeing these players play against each other and seeing what they can do on the field. They've talked to all these people and these are the guys are most likely to go at the top of the draft. And so let's start with the Generation Adidas players. So the first one on here and who Travis Clark has going number one is Kimani Stewart-Baines. He is from University of Maryland. He's a winger, really talented player. Like, again, this is the guy that him and the second guy we're going to talk about are who Travis Clark says are most likely to like be able to be like sold on for a transfer fee in this draft. Plays on the left wing. He's not like super like shifty and dribbly, but has really good speed and burst and can kind of create himself space in that way. And then good in front of goal, really dangerous in front of goal. He is a freshman again. So this is the lottery ticket part of it for me is like, and for Austin FC, like even if I don't think this guy's going to be available at number five, but if he were, this is a situation where like, if this guy's available, I'd say Austin FC trade the pick to someone who wants him because I don't think this guy helps Austin FC this year. And we need to be able to generate that value out of this pick. And so if you pick a guy and then sit him back to college for a year or to your MLS Next Pro team or whatever, like that's not helping us very much. So the second guy on the list here is Steven Anor. He's a freshman striker for Virginia, originally from Ghana. Went to Montverde Academy in Florida, which is like it's like college and pro athlete factory, essentially. They pull in a lot of international kids to come play high school ball there and then like help them get placed into college programs. He scored 10 goals in 19 games for Virginia and did a round off backflip after almost every one of them, making him Mike Crignola's favorite pick in this draft.
Right. We need a guy who do a backflip. Mike was looking for that, I think, in the media game too, even honestly, that we played at Harper Park. It's like, who would be most likely to take it? Mostly like taking a backflip. He was the person I saw like the most exciting highlight film of. I think we talked about off air. It's pretty easy to see. It's a lot easier to watch highlight tape of forwards than like center backs, you know, generally in these YouTube packages. The height 6 foot, weight 140 is an interesting comparison. This is not a thick dude, but hopefully a dude that will fill out at some point.
Yeah. I mean, so with Steven Anor, he runs in behind a lot and likes to stretch the defense, and he is fairly slim, like a pretty slim frame, but pretty good aerial ability. And if you watch like the highlight package that's floating around, some really nice like jumping up and winning a header and like a really nice finessed header into the far corner. So it's like really cool headed goals, really aggressive in the box, and like will make really good runs, get himself into positions to receive the ball. Still looks like a little bit young at times when you watch him play. And like we talked about this with Fodre this last year in MLS Next Pro. He'll try to like beat guys with athleticism in moments where like he gets away with it in college, but will probably not get away with it in MLS. And so still needs like some of that experience and polish to make it in MLS. But the like just the raw talent is there in both of these guys to the extent that somebody's going to pick them and take a chance on them.
All right, next up. Oh, another Clemson.
One more. One more GA player.
Yeah, another Clemson GA player. Speaking of Philip Mayaka, that is...
I'm going to butcher the name. Boy.
Pop Marboy. Where's Pop Marboy from?
He's from Senegal. Also went to Montferrat Academy in Florida. Freshman center back from Clemson, as you said. Clemson has him listed as 6'1", 196. So big guy, physical center back, good in the things you'd expect him to be good at. Physical duels on the ground, aerial duels. He moves fairly well for his size. And watching him, I pulled up Y Scout video of him defending, because highlight packages for center backs aren't super helpful all the time.
Yes. Those are what I watch.
So he's able to defend in space against college players at least, but it's hard to say without seeing more of him or seeing him against other opposition, but I feel like maybe his speed and in 1v1s like out in space could get taken advantage of in against pro players. But that's, we'll see. But yeah, it looks like big talented center back, was kind of like the anchor of Clemson's defense as a freshman, and so that's saying a lot in a position that usually takes a few years to kind of grow into. Usually older players coming out of the draft as center backs, for him to be rated this high at such a young age, like that's saying something. So one thing to remember about all three of these guys is they're all internationals, and so depending on how much any team or Austin FC values their international spots, that might make them think twice about taking one of these players as well.
Okay, so the whole thing's a crapshoot, and we would not expect usually any of these guys to fall to Austin.
But we didn't expect Kip Keller to fall to us either.
And I believe I think I looked at two or three mock drafts. None of them had them falling to us. Like, maybe do you have a couple other guys that you expect to maybe be Austin players, either because like they're in one of the mock drafts or because you particularly like them?
Yeah. So I think the guy that I liked watching the most was Matthew Bell. Pulled up a pretty sizable little Y Scout playlist of him. He's 21-year-old junior from played for Marshall. He's originally from Jamaica, but played high school ball in Connecticut. He had 10 goals in 20 games and also 12 assists in those 20 games. They have him listed as a forward, but in the games that I watched, he was often paired with a bigger striker. And so he ended up kind of dropping off and operating as like a wide playmaker. And then sometimes playing as like a straight up number 10. And they would have two wide wingers and a big striker in front of him. And he was the playmaker, kind of pulling the strings everywhere. But a really crafty player, really clever in the box and in tight spaces, really skillful. And just, I don't know if he's going to be able to do this at the pro level, but watching him just clown on college players, this was my favorite little playlist to set up and watch, because just he's a lot of fun to watch.
Well, the next guy, I've seen two different super drafts compare him to Duncan McGuire. So you want to go and get into Logan Farrington?
Yeah. So Logan Farrington is who the Top Drawer Soccer mock draft has Austin FC picking at number 5. After watching film on him, I would be totally fine if this is the guy that Austin FC ends up with. He is a senior striker from Oregon State, but played 3 years at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and then transferred for a senior year, scored 15 goals and had 7 assists in 21 games. And so he's 6'2", kind of like the classic striker frame. So tall, athletic, has a really heavy shot, but has pretty good ball skill that allows him to kind of carry it whenever he's in space. He can carry the ball and kind of, I wouldn't call him dribbly or shifty, but he's just skillful enough that he can kind of make space for himself. And then also in like hold up play, if he receives with the ball at his back, he can turn and kind of keep the ball as players kind of catch up to him. But he is a striker at the end of the day. And he wants to get in front of goal. He wants to shoot. And so, yeah, as you mentioned, Travis Clark said, he doesn't know if there is anybody like Duncan McGuire in this draft, but if there is, like, this is the closest to it. Those of you who don't know, Duncan McGuire was the number one pick last year, scored, I think, 13 goals in MLS this year.
And yeah, so he had a really strong season.
If you can get that out of the draft, that is like, that's winning the lottery. That's winning the Powerball right there.
Yeah.
And so I really like this player. And I think because of his skill set and being able to kind of combine and play on the ball, like he might be a decent fit for Austin and could slide into that cheap third spot that we've been talking about. And then we could still spend on someone to compete with the starting position and hope this guy can come along and be that cheap third guy.
All right. Well, next guy we're going to talk about is a guy that played the same position at the same school, and I believe is the same height as the great Freddie Kleeman. And that would be Nate Jones, center back out of the University of Washington.
Yeah. I think if the other center back we've talked about so far is the GA player, Potmar Boy. If both of these guys were available at the number 5 pick, I would, like me personally, based on the limited film I've seen, I might have a hard time picking Boy over Nate Jones. I really liked what I saw of Nate Jones. He's 6'3", senior, left-footed center back from University of Washington. And Washington is known for being like a center back factory. He's taller than Potmar Boy, but feels like he like moves more elegantly. Like he seems, you know, you see some guys who are big and tall and they look like they're lumbering when they run. Nate Jones looks like an elegant 6'3" and moves pretty smoothly. He's more comfortable on the ball than Marboy to me, it seems as well. And it seems like a little bit like Julio Cascante, in that like, if his body were different than it is, he would probably be playing a different position. But because he's gigantic, it's like, you're a center back. But I think he's just overall a more complete player than Marboy is. And so, again, like, I know Marboy is the young, hot prospect, but because he's so young and because of Nate Jones' specific skill set and being good on the ball, I would have a hard time not taking Jones over Marboy.
Well, I think the next guy is MLS just put out their mock draft like an hour ago, and their 5th pick for Austin is Jacob Morrell, forward from Georgetown. Sophomore, still needs to develop, but could be a big hit. There's a chance he could return to school for his junior year. Did you watch film from him?
I did. Yeah. Not so different, like a fairly similar profile to Logan Farrington as far as size and playing style goes. And even though he like has that size, he seems like less of a physical player with a lot of these guys. Like coaches are probably going to want to get them in the weight room and put some muscle on them. But I think Morrell, like because of his age, he seems like, again, one of those guys that's probably a good fit for somebody, but I don't know that it's a good fit for Austin necessarily, because I don't think we're going to get any real value out of him this year.
All right. I think, okay, so I guess the best goalkeeper in the pool is a guy named Brian Dowd, goalkeeper at Notre Dame.
I mean, Brian Dowd, like we have too many keepers.
Yeah, that's not
more than we know what we do with. So unless you're playing, like have a sale lined up for one of our current guys, like I don't really see us taking a goalkeeper.
Gotcha. Was there anybody else in this like player pool that excites you then before we move on?
Yeah, a couple of other names. So Hugo Bacharach is a tall, lanky center back from Indiana. He looks a little bit like Sergio Busquets. Played a lot of center back in college, but most of his senior year played defensive mid. Originally from Spain and played in Villarreal's academy. And he would take up an international spot. So I think there's several reasons why he might not be the right fit, but he is a Spanish center back who's good with the ball. Maybe Rodolfo Borrell sees this as like, okay, this is going to be one of my guys. I'm going to bring him in. He's going to be kind of the one to help implement the system. So maybe him, but I think with all the other center back options ahead of him, it's going to be hard to not take one of those at number five instead. The other ones that I had listed were Joel Sangwa, a mobile center back from Akron. Travis Clark says that he might need to move to fullback as well. And so just because of position of need, that could be an option. And another one is Kevin Bonilla from University of Portland. He had 10 assists from right back for Portland. Really skillful player at that right back position. Again, like I don't know that they're necessarily like the best shots, but just given positions of need, I could see them maybe going for one of these guys.
All right, so we've hit a lot of the spotlight players, and one of the things is some of you will know who Austin picked by the time you listen to this show. It's a little bit, and we appreciate you diehard listeners who will listen to this in the morning before it happens, be excited to find out whether we were right or wrong. But sort of given like the GA players, the other people we think are sort of in the top dozen or so players in the draft, like, I guess, Landon, one, if it was totally up to you, who would you pick? And then who do you expect Austin to pick?
Yeah, I mean, you have to consider the GA players, but with Austin at five, there's a small chance of them doing it. So my picks would be the striker Logan Farrington or the center back Nate Jones. Those would be my top two picks as far as like who I think could potentially like make the team this year. The like wild card for me, just because I loved watching him so much, is Matthew Bell. So if we get any of those three guys, I'll be pretty happy and like pretty high on them. Who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. You've convinced me, I guess, given the history of this, that either Kevani Stewart-Baines or Steven Anor, who supposedly without a doubt the top two players in this draft and are both GA players, that somehow one of them will fall to us like in a Danny Ferreira situation. And whichever one it is will be amazing.
I'll take that if that happens. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with some more Austin FC news. When no one is around. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FEF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FEF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education in Landon. I can see you reaching over, which must mean you have your 2024 Dogs of FVF Law calendar.
We're gonna
pick like our favorite. Obviously, every dog in this calendar is an amazing good boy, 10 out of 10. But do you have like a favorite boy or girl in this group of dogs?
I do. I picked out two dogs that are my favorites. And if I described to you what my favorite kind of dogs look like, you could probably pick them out. But I like kind of scruffy but still soft furred dog. I like them to be a mutt. I don't want to be able to look at them and tell what breed they are. And I want them to look kind of stupid and friendly. So April's dog, Penny, is one of my top picks.
Yeah. So and then, just, re- just realized this is going to be great for us, but maybe not for for everybody else who doesn't have the calendar. But yes, I agree. Penny is a beautiful looking dog.
And then Dasher from July.
Yeah, those are good choices. So I like my dogs were August because I feel like they go really well together.
Oh, yeah.
These are That's Maggie and Quincy. They're both like, my dogs are small dogs, but like they look like big, friendly, like happy-go-lucky. Yeah, it's like smiley dogs. Also the month of my birthday, which may have something to do with it. But yeah, love the FEF calendar that comes out every year. Y'all hire them if you have an issue, dog related or not.
You can go to FVF.law to find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's FVF.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over 5 decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials paid an average of $336 a year of bank fees, which works out as 6 AUD game tickets per person per year. You can probably also get a couple of dogs from Austin Pets Alive, going back to our last commercial, for that amount of money. You'll pay none of those bank fees with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your banking and Amplify Credit Union. To learn more, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower.
We'd like to talk about our premier sponsor, McGuire Woods Consulting, which helps companies and nonprofits navigate the political process at the Texas Capitol, at the city level, and at the national level through lobbying, communication strategies, and general advocacy.
With offices across the country and in 10 MLS cities, including Austin, Houston, and Dallas, McGuire Woods Consulting is solidly Verde and Black. Learn more about our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com. All right, we are back. We're going to jump into some Austin FC news. I guess let's start off with some rumors that we helped spread last week, I guess. Phil Westquint came on and talked to us about some things he had heard about LAFC potentially being interested in Danny Pereira. Hernan from We Are Austin TV, as well as a few other folks, are reporting other teams interested in him as well. I don't think we've gotten any new information out of this, but we also haven't had any information contradicting it either.
Right. Nobody said like Danny settled and it's all good. And we've heard, you know, from a guy who knows a guy, you know, ongoing that there's smoke behind this. So I don't know, man. It just leaves me very unsettled. And I feel like this is not a thing that's going to be resolved.
Yeah. I mean, soon. Yeah. And there is enough smoke here and like the places where the smoke is coming from and where we're hearing things. This isn't made up. Like this is, there's something here. How real it is what's still up in the air. And if it's actually going to go through, who knows, but it doesn't seem to be going away or nobody's coming out and saying, no, this isn't happening.
Yeah. Which is kind of unsettling for sure. Then the other thing we had, we talked about jerseys several weeks in a row too. And we had this for about 4 hours, like thing that everybody thought was going to be the Austin FC jersey, which I don't know. I think, did you describe it as like Southern Utah on a Yeti kit?
The landscape on there looked like to me. That's what kind of made me think that it wasn't real. That combined with like what we have heard about what it looks like, it didn't match up with what we had heard. And so did you think this was real when you saw it?
No, I mean, no, it didn't really match that much. The part that did is we talked about sort of maybe the vibe and like just the general color scheme and look sort of fits with that, but it doesn't look anything like Austin in the Sources Footy headlines, which is, renowned for, yeah, post anything from anybody from anywhere. Yeah, exactly. I think they posted like a false 9 fake jersey last year as the new Austin FC kit. And I think this is just sort of a testament to how desperate everybody is during the offseason to have some news. And I think it was so our friend Chris Haig, right? Sort of like found the source and debunked it.
Yeah. It was like some kid in France, I think, that had just like made it on like the kit creator on FIFA. And so it's like, which makes a lot of sense to me whenever you see like the landscape on there. For folks who haven't seen it, it looks kind of like, like a hilly desert landscape, and it seems to be like some cactuses or some like weird desert trees going on there. And so it seems like what some random kid in France might think somewhere in Texas looked like, but not this part of Texas.
Yeah. And not to send a shout out to the interview we'll play next week, but that's sort of the, like that kind of topic will come up too. The other thing we know, is that on Wednesday, December 20th, we will get the schedule release. So we kind of know what's going to happen in the Western Conference. Not much of an idea of which Eastern Conference teams Austin's going to play, which I think is really the most interesting part of any schedule release. Are there any road trips? So, given what you know about where Austin's been over the last couple of years, like, are there road trips that you would hope to see, like something you would be excited to have as part of the schedule to go check out?
Yeah, I mean, I think my list has, like, kind of the top of my wish list has remained the same because I haven't crossed any of them off. But Montreal and Vancouver kind of stay at the top of my list. So we'll definitely get Vancouver, right? They're a Western Conference team. We've played Montreal, I think, two times now. So there's a decent chance we won't play them again. And then talking about other Western Conference teams, again, staying at the top of my list is just as like a city I would like to go to and have never been to is Portland.
And so I've been to Portland several times. I would put Seattle on my list as a city that I've not been to, but think would be fun to go to. And for Eastern Conference, like, it's not the most scenic travel destination everywhere, but like Cincinnati still remains a place just from the stadium and the fans and stuff that would be a fun soccer trip.
Yeah, that stadium does look awesome. What do you think the odds of Miami coming to Austin are?
Well, I think they're very, very low. Since Miami has recently come to Austin, it doesn't make any sense in that rotation.
No, we went there.
Oh, that's right. Oh, we went
it was
to Miami.
Pre-Messi.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've played Eastern Conference teams 2 years in a row, so it wouldn't be unheard of. But I still am of the belief that MLS is going to kind of rig it a little bit and put him in bigger stadiums that they can sell more tickets to. And Austin fills their stadium anyway, and it's not that big. So I think for that reason, MLS will not let it happen.
Okay, I was going to give that conspiracy theory about why it might not happen, but I agree with that too. That seems that seems the most likely is that he will not end up in Austin, probably, or Dallas or Houston, right? I mean, it's because
maybe Houston. I guess it's not as big, but it would help them fill a stadium that's often not full.
It's not full. That's true. That's true. But yeah, I think so many people I talk to, it's like, oh man, if Messi plays in Texas, I'm going to go. And I was like, yes, you and how many people live in Texas? 20 million, 10 million other people are going to have the same idea.
Yeah. And then folks from Northern Mexico or whatever country who can find a cheap flight in or whatever, like
we're all in the same boat, man.
Yeah.
So bad news that we got from Adrian Healy on Twitter, is that Adrian Healy will apparently not be calling MLS games next year. So he said after 25 years of calling the league, he's found out that he won't be calling it anymore. Beyond that, which this is not surprising based upon our conversations, talked about like how the supporters and fans needed to like have a voice and make sure that people understood that the team and the league weren't a lot without them. Super disappointing. I mean, what do you think about it overall? Other than like, it's bad. It seems bad.
Yeah, I mean, very sad for Adrian is someone who we've gotten to know over the last few years, and we have fond memories of like him calling Austin FC games. But I like it's hard not to for anybody out on the outside to maybe view this as like homerism. But I'm saying it because I believe it to be true that Adrian Healy is one of the best play-by-play commentators that Apple TV has right now. And so If he is not what they're looking for in their commentating, like there are other guys in their stable that if they said, okay, we're not going to go with you because it's a style thing, I would understand. But with Adrian Healy, I'm like, I just don't get it. And it makes me really nervous for like, what is it that they're looking for? What are they trying to change to?
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. If Adrian's style is not the style Apple wants, like I don't understand the logic behind that, because it doesn't make any sense, right? He's like the guy that does the best job out of all of them about like using the play-by-play role to sort of talk about what's going on and like sort of paint a picture of the match and like let the analyst do analyst things and like really professional and really knows his role. And yeah, I don't know what else they want. And we've said this like many times, like one of the coolest things about doing this show is like having Adrian Healy's phone number and getting to text him and like ask him questions. But that was because of all the work he did before and how much we respect him as a broadcaster, not just because like we want to be buddies with the OSFC announcer, but like the fact that he's one of the preeminent voices in the game over the last 25 years and still up to this year was like doing a great job and was one of my, if not my very favorite crew to hear, was him and Kobe Jones. Like, it's just, it makes you worry about sort of what Apple has in store to think that like what he delivers is not what they value anymore.
Yeah, we expected some changes in the broadcast this year, right? We've heard some things about like maybe at some points not sending, not like having every crew travel every weekend and having some games call out of studio. So like we were expecting changes, and some of them maybe welcome changes, but this is not one of them.
No. So I'm interested to see what happens. Like, what is next for Adrian Healy? We would love to have him back on at some point. There are a lot of people, and it's particularly Austin FC fan community, but in the Major League Soccer community that were like sad to hear that. And I don't know, we could leave it at that and take another break. And then we're going to talk about some Major League Soccer news, kind of following the lines of what we're covering now. Some slightly disturbing things that MLS seems to be committed to doing. But let's take a break and sort of get into those points. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Covert Ford. The Coverts have been meeting the needs of local car buyers for 114 years because of their service, financial expertise, and support after the sale.
In addition to supporting car buyers, Covert's an important part of the soccer community and the official automotive partner of Austin FC.
This week, we'd again like to talk to you about a F-150 XLT. You can get this 2.9% APR for 72 months plus no payment for 90 days. This is stock number 2231529. Advertised price is $44,648. With discounts, you can get this again for 2.9% APR for 72 months and no payments. Check the website or the dealer for details.
If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, be sure to check out covertford.com.
Moon Tower Soccer is also brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. The Sage Wilson Realty team is made up of Austin experts who are client-focused and have over 30 years of combined real estate experience.
If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, we are back. We're going to get into the latest MLS controversies. I believe on the last show, we talked about how I think the news had come out. Don Garber said there's not going to be a fourth DP. And I said that that's not necessarily a bad thing. They could still add some other things or change some other rules that would still be very valuable and would like change MLS for the better and kind of open things up. I was wrong. They chose not to do any of those things.
Yeah, I think the news was on the there were rule changes like in game, and we'll talk about those in a second. But as far as like salary mechanism stuff like that go, almost nothing new. So no expansion of U22s, which I think is a thing that we talked about last week as a possibility. Discovery list reduced from 7 to 5 players. Took we could do away with the discovery process, and probably nobody would care or notice. I guess the one positive-ish thing is that transfer fees from designated player transfers can be used as GAM, so that does free up some additional funds in certain situations for rosters, like not a ton. So what do you think the holdup is here?
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I think the one good thing that it's not based on this news, it's just something that was already going to happen, is that the way that the CBA works, there is a significant chunk of GAM being added to the budget this year. And that was just baked into the collective bargaining agreement. So there will be more money in the league, but like that was already going to be there. And so having Messi come in and not changing any of this stuff, like I don't know. I guess they just think like with the rules that are in place already that they can still kind of seize this moment and take advantage of it, or they think that they don't really need to take advantage of anything and just like things are fine as they are.
Yeah, we'll get into this other. We can come back to that when we get into maybe the other big piece of news. Let's talk about the endgame changes, because I feel like these are all good and things that we want people to see.
Absolutely.
One is that the rules, those of us that have watched MLS Next Pro, there's rules where if you remain down for suspected injury for at least 15 seconds, you have to actually come off the field. So this is to sort of reduce the time wasting. And that seemed to be pretty effective last year. I don't remember the numbers on it, but I think it did.
Yeah, they ran numbers in MLS Next Pro, and it actually made a difference in wasted time during the game.
So it'll be good to see that. Stoppage time will now be showed in the stadiums, which means, you know, before the clock would stop at 90. And those of us like me that would remember to start our watches would suddenly become very important to our section. But now the clock will continue to run, which
it's
seems
crazy
like,
that that wasn't already a thing. Like, I don't understand why that wasn't already a thing.
Yeah, that one seems like a super easy, simple thing to change. When being subbed off, players are required to exit the playing field within 10 seconds, which I feel like will reduce some of the guys taking a slow walk. You know, guys playing on the road for a team up by one that take like the stroll, like the long way around the outside of the stadium will no longer take place. That seems like a good change. VAR decisions will be announced by the referees. Again, one that I can't believe didn't exist before, but they'll announce it. And there's some player safety thing about when players suffer head injuries, they'll go off the field and come back at the same time. So I think the end game changes are all good. I think things will like lead to better gameplay, probably quicker gameplay, and a better overall product on the field.
Yeah, I think time wasting has become one of the most annoying things and like one of the bigger problems in important soccer games. And so I'm really glad that they're being proactive in trying to cut that down. And I mean, if it goes well, I could see this being implemented in other leagues around the world. So yeah, hopefully this can be a positive step towards taking some of the negative parts out of our game.
All right. So big picture, then let's go to another like negative part, not negative part of our game in terms of the game, but Major League Soccer announced that we talked last week about schedule congestion, and there was this like comment from Don Garber in the State of the League that had something to do with the Open Cup. And I don't think that any of us thought that that this announcement would be what he meant when he talked about finding ways to relieve schedule congestion through the Open Cup. So basically no first teams will be playing in the US Open Cup. It will all be MLS Next Pro clubs. Lots of negative reaction from fans, from supporters groups, from writers like Pablo Maurer from The Athletic, and Jeff Reuter, like from others, like generally derided overall from people that care a lot about soccer in the United States. Maybe not like people that are just MLS fans that don't have like a lot of context. But yeah, this seems like a bad move.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I believe that they're doing it due to fixture congestion, but the reason that this is what's getting cut out is because this is the competition that MLS has the least control over, does not have the broadcast rights to, and makes the least money off of.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So if you were, it's like fixture congestion is a real thing. We've all talked about that, but there are two tournaments you could cut out. So maybe like go into more detail on why this is why you believe this is the one and not leagues. Nations League, is that right?
No,
League's Cup, sorry. Which seems like it's something that's happened for 1 year and to mix results. But yeah, maybe dig into that a little bit more.
Yeah, like so the League's Cup competition with Liga MX is like MLS and Apple TV are like very involved in that, and they directly profit from its success and also directly profit from the partnership between MLS and Liga MX. US Open Cup is run by United States Soccer Federation. And I think MLS has been a little grumpy about this competition for several years because their players have to play midweek. It adds games. It adds travel. They have to play in bad locations where they're not going to make much money off of either the broadcast or the gate. And so MLS as an organization doesn't really like it. I'm guessing MLS players probably aren't that upset about this either for the most part.
Oh, I've seen some generally like from MLS players. They don't love playing in the US Open Cup either. Because yeah. of exactly for the same reasons that you mentioned too. They're playing extra games. You know, I don't really understand if they get paid extra for it or not, you know. And yeah, in weird places and the travel's probably bad. And so like I think they probably also have not loved the cup. But it just seems like a really cynical position for yeah. the league to be in.
It absolutely is. And like, it's, I don't know, like it's, these competitions are really cool and they're really like special for the sport in whatever country, like having these lower level teams. And I think it's true. Like something needs to change a little bit with the US Open Cup. But it's really undercutting the value of it, period, if MLS just says, no, nah, we're not doing it.
Yeah, and just even as a fan, like one of the most fun games this year for me was the New Mexico United match.
Yeah.
Because it was cool to see a USL team play in Austin. It's obviously cool to see Roddy Reddit's goal, which was a real highlight. But just this opportunity, and even when we went to San Antonio, the year before, other than the fact that Austin lost in San Antonio, like it was an amazing, like there's a big group that traveled and there was camaraderie and there's this like, what was at the time? Sort of this emerging rivalry between the two cities. Cause of the, like the way the franchise came in and stuff. And it's kind of opportunities that don't happen through anything other than having a competition like the US Open Cup.
Yeah. As a neutral, the San Antonio story is great. Like that's what you want out of that tournament. And so there are changes that need to be made to somehow to make the US Open Cup more relevant, more worth teams' while to participate. Because like you said, players don't like doing it. Teams probably just don't like doing it in general, but I think it's a special enough thing and like valuable enough thing culturally to be worth putting some effort into and trying to kind of rejuvenate it and make it something worth keeping around. And so who knows if this is a bargaining ploy that MLS is going to back out for a year and then come back and say, okay, we'll join, but under these circumstances, or we want this to happen. Or maybe they're just done and US Open Cup turns into a lower league tournament.
Which is super disappointing. Still, I mean, I'm kind of excited to see how the FC Thill players do in the US Open Cup.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be, And I'll be interested to see like where they, if they get a home game, are they going to play it at Parmer Field? Or are they going to play it at Q2? Like I'm intrigued by all that. I will not be boycotting the games. Like I love watching our boys so much that like, I'm just going to be angry about it, but not able to like put my pocketbook where like my sense of justice is. And so I'll still watch it this year.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up?
No, let's go ahead and wrap it up.
All right. As we said, we'll be out next week, but we will have a show for you. Before we close out this week, we'd like to remind you to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. And then find us on Twitter at LVRO87 and JBentley_ATX. And then at Moon Tower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And then check out the Patreon. Check out Phil West's Substack at verdealday.substack.com. And then, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with an interview and then the following week with maybe a live show on New Year's Day. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time.
When no one is around.
Thank for nothing, see you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.